Morning, everybody. I asked Brinley Keener Wednesday night after our class here. I wished her a good spring break. And she looked at me and said, last year it was real long. She had me there. I remember last Friday, I was driving back up. I'd been somewhere on the south side of town, maybe to Cox, I don't remember. But I was driving back up here to the office and had the radio on. And a special news conference came on with the mayor and with the county health director. And the mayor at that time announced a stay-at-home order, which was about to begin. 2 days before that, I'd met with our elders and with Justin, and our elders had given him four things to kind of focus on that they wanted him to make priorities when their family made the move here. And then that night, I had to get together here with, I think Scott was here, and we had others on the phone with us, and we had to talk about what to do. Some of our members sent us messages about how we might go about safely observing the Lord's Supper, stuff that I never even had to even begin to think about before, and I'm satisfied none of us had. And we decided on our best judgment and advice we could get that Lord's Day we would go ahead and meet. We'd figure a way to do the supper, like we're doing it now. And we wouldn't have classes that day, nor Sunday evening services. And then the following Sunday, we had to begin to live stream. On March the 15th of that year, we did read that passage that Fred helped us think about a moment ago from 1 Timothy 2, and we prayed. We'd been asked to pray for our country, and that's what we did, and we prayed for the church, we prayed for ourselves, we prayed together. And then the Sundays after that, the next three, we decided to focus on things that abide. You know what they are. These three abide: faith, hope, and love. We preached on the faith for all circumstances, and the hope, which is a helmet, and love, which is a breastplate. Things that abide. We thought that would be a way to maintain our spiritual health for the long run. So here we are now. And you're tired of hearing about what happened a year ago, and I'm tired of how we've had to do things through the whole year. But I thank the good Lord that we're still here. The question is whether we're still here in a better case. If the better things are flourishing in our lives or not. Justin helped our little ones to figure out how to measure our growth, how to decide whether we're in a better case or not. Don't worry, I'm not going to advise you to eat your vegetables right now. I do think it's important, though, for us to have some way of kind of evaluating where we are now, how we've done, whether despite everything else, in some ways, the better case is ours. And so I've chosen a passage that I love to help us think about this. It's from Hebrews chapter 6, and it begins at verse 9. This is how we would tell if things are better with us in a way that the Lord would approve of, in a way that He would look at as well in our lives. And I should mention that this is a passage which occurs in the shadow immediately after maybe the strongest, almost the most stern admonition or warning in the letter to the Hebrews. And it's saying we want to be ground like good ground that's been cultivated and produces good fruit and receives a blessing from God, and not like ground that just bore thorns and thistles and had to be burned off. We want to be the former, not the latter. And then he says, reaffirming his confidence in his brothers and sisters, though we speak in this way, yet in your case, beloved, by the way, this is the only time the word beloved is used in this great letter, we feel sure of better things. The NEB translated it, we feel sure that you are in the better case. That's where I got the title for this. Of better things. Things that belong to salvation. Things that accompany your salvation. Something that go with the rescue that you've received from the Lord. For this is why we are persuaded of the better case for you. For God is not unjust so as to overlook your work and the love that you've shown for his name in serving the saints as you still do. And we desire that each one of you show the same earnestness to have the full assurance of hope until the end, so that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Now, as Justin forewarned us or informed us ahead of time, there are measures for our progress. I'd like to set this in its context here in this letter. If you look back a little bit to chapter 5 and verse 11, the Hebrew writer has been concerned that his brothers not become dull of hearing, but rather that they be moving on toward maturity. Verse 14, solid food is for the mature, those who are moving toward completeness in their lives, those who are becoming what the Lord wants us to be. And then in chapter 6 in verse 1, there is the appeal that he's making. Leave the elementary doctrines. Not leave in the sense of just forget them, but leave like we leave the ABCs as we read, as we begin to read and to master language, to build on those basic things, to make the proper use of them. Go on to maturity, he says. And then, in case we wonder, well, are we or not going on to maturity, he comes to the passage that we have read here, the better case. I want you to notice with me here that in this passage, the three markers that he uses are the same ones that are throughout the New Testament. I tried to look, and in at least a half a dozen of Paul's letters, there are important passages where he uses these three things: faith, hope, and love. Of course, I mentioned 1 Corinthians 13:13 a moment ago, but in Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, both of the Thessalonian letters, and 1 Timothy, Paul will group these things together in different passages. They're not always warm, fuzzy passages either. They are addressing the difficult challenges of Christian living often, and they're calling the Lord's people to be what they ought to be. In 1 Peter chapter 1, the three are grouped together again. And in the whole letter of 1 John, these three things are repeatedly used to remind us to walk in the direction that we ought to be walking in. Look at them here in our text. In verse 10, the first measure that he addresses is love. And if you look in your Bible with me there, notice it again. God is not so unjust as to overlook your work and the love that you have shown for his name. Love for his name. Is that love real and strong and healthy? How do you show love for his name? And our first response would be in the service, in the worship we offer up to him, and the good things that we offer to him in our lives in service. That would be in Hebrews 13, verses 15 and 16. In this letter to the Hebrews, He later on specifies how they have shown love for God's name. In chapter 10, verse 32, he mentions the former days when, after you were enlightened, you endured a hard struggle with sufferings. That's showing love for God's name. Sometimes being publicly exposed to reproach and affliction. Sometimes being partners with those so treated. You had compassion on those in prison. That would be your brothers and sisters probably who may be there for their faith, or because they have been so without that they've put there. You joyfully accepted the plundering of your property again for your faith, since you knew that you yourselves had a better possession and an abiding one. Now that moves love for the Lord's name past just the nice feelings into real life. And it calls in question the matter of the devotion that's present in the lives of the Lord's people. The first marker is that kind of love toward each other, toward the Lord's name, that does that type of thing, and then the kind of love for each other that we read about in 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 and following. This is how love acts. You know this. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. That's the first measure. Second, hope. Look at verse 11 in our text. Verse 11, he focuses on the same earnestness to have the full assurance of hope until the end. Hope is an expectation or a confidence in what will be as God has promised that it will be. Hope is something which has an impact in terms of anchoring the soul, encouraging the person in his challenges. It is confidence. It is a certainty about what God has promised to His people. It is the looking forward to those things becoming actual and complete in life. Hope is the thing that causes us to have an interest, an earnestness, a zeal, a drive for the things that we hope in. We traditionally think of our hope in relation to the coming of the Lord and to what He's promised in eternity. Have we over the past year seen those things become more precious to us, or have we seen them fade from our picture, or fade from our interest? That would be an important marker. And then third, there is faith, verse 12, that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and inherit the promises and so forth. Faith is the trust in God, which carries us through so that even whenever things do not immediately look outwardly like we want them to look, we still trust that God is at work and that His will be done, and that we can depend on His will to be done. Faith is the kind of trust in the Lord which makes a sense of peace possible in our everyday lives. We've sung about it. It's well with our soul. It's well with my soul. How do I know that? I trust in the Father who made it well, and in the Son who accomplishes it for us, and in what the Spirit does in the lives of the Lord's people. Those are the three measures. They're not the ones that we sometimes think. Numbers, success, accomplishments, reputation, Well, maybe not so much, but love, hope, and faith. Now, notice, and I think this is important, that in each case in our text here, these sort of inward qualities that it would be hard for us to really evaluate, maybe even in ourselves and certainly in each other, are accompanied by expressions that are identifiable. It's interesting to me that in this passage especially, each one there's a partner attached to each of these terms, which is important. With love, it's work. The works. Notice verse 10 again. Your work and the love that you have shown for His name in serving the saints as you still do. So I think when I think of our life together over the past year, I can think of some ways when love was still at work. We didn't always feel warm and fuzzy, but love was still at work. We ended up 1 week when we're not used to it at all from being able to at least live stream, thanks to John and Scott and you guys back there who did all of that. And we'd end up with a grand total of 8 or 10 people in this room trying to have church and trying to imagine our brothers and sisters who were with us out there together. How many of you were with us for at least one live stream service through the year? All right. Most of you are willing to admit that. That's love. How many of you got a call from somebody from the congregation at some point during this last year? Raise your hands higher so even I can see them. That happened because a lot of you guys did the calling. Over the past year, we tried to make available, as we said we would on March the 15th, a thought for each day that went along with our daily Bible reading. They'd take 2 or 3 minutes to read, a lot longer to write. John tells me that now we have 135 or more pages of 10-point type and half-inch margins of things that we've tried to send out. How many of you got a visit from the COVID caravan at some point during this past year? Smiling faces. Greta, you made some of those visits. You can raise your hand too. In a lot of ways, people tried to show love. We got to participate in 2 special weddings. I ended up helping, I think, with 11 or 12 memorial services with families in really, really odd situations, one of which is my own brother. There's still a lot of love shown, folks. Thank you so much for that. And please don't overlook it. God doesn't. And then when we got to come back, even though not everybody was sure that you wanted to do that yet or to do what we had to do it according to the governing authorities, we still did. And thank you so much for that. Then there's hope. Verse 11 says hope is accompanied by assurance. Assurance happens because you need to be reassured. And you have to stop and think, wait a minute, is this really going to happen? Is this really what I expect? Is this really worth living for? And you get to tell yourself, yes, it is, and it's renewed. Reassurance is the new awareness that everything is going to be okay. I heard our elders or one of them say over and over again from this spot here, everything's going to be okay. We're going to do this. We can make this. So that's hope. And then faith is accompanied by patience. Verse 12. Those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Faith is what makes you see the long term and hang in there long term. Hang in there as if it's going to be worth it. Keep doing what you believe in over the long term. So maybe that's why faith, hope, and love are the measures of maturity. Each one of those things, each one of those expressions takes maturity. When we're immature, we want other people to do for us. When we're immature and we don't get what we want immediately, we lose our hope. When we're immature, we cannot bring ourselves to discipline ourselves by faith, according to faith. Whether we're in a better case is reflected here in these ways. Is there labor motivated by love? Is there assurance and well-being based on hope? And is there discipline and stick-to-itiveness in life that arises from faith? Well, that's the interesting thing that this passage asks us to consider. And it says that if these things are present, then you're in a better case. You're in the better case. No matter what happened in between, you're in the better case if these things are just that much more or deeper or richer than they were this time back then. Now, why? I think it's because of two things. First, these things being present in our lives are indications of a continuing response to the Lord. The response that we make initially in becoming Christians, when we make the good confession, I believe Jesus is the Son of God, Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and when we are united with Him in baptism, as thank the Lord some of you were last year, that's not the last response that maturing people make to the Lord. The book of Hebrews itself illustrates what I'm talking about here. First off, there's the continuing response to the faithfulness of God. It says in chapter 10, verse 24, "For he who promised is faithful." What is the proper response to the continuing or to the faithfulness of God? That's verse 23 of Hebrews 10. It's faith. Faith, which is patient, is simply a continuing response to the faithfulness of God. And in Hebrews 6, in fact, it goes ahead to talk about this. God made a promise to Abraham. And you remember that promise took 25 long years to ever come to pass, and when it looked impossible, and yet God kept His promise. He's a God who cannot lie, who made an oath just to try to say to people, "You can trust that I'm trustworthy." Second, in Hebrews, there is a continuing response to the work of Christ, especially to the priesthood, the high priesthood of Christ. He offered one sacrifice for sins forever, a better sacrifice, as Hebrews 9 in verse 23 puts it, better sacrifices, a better covenant initiated by His blood, this book emphasizes, and a better hope, chapter 7 and verse 19. The better covenant is in verse 22 of chapter 7. Here in chapter 6, the idea is that having offered His blood to as one sacrifice for sins forever, He's now entered into heaven itself as a forerunner for us, like a rope attached to our anchor. He's there in heaven in the presence of God for us. And our continuing response to that is hope, hoping in Him. And then there's the continuing response to the Spirit of grace. The Spirit of grace is mentioned in chapter 10 and verse 29. And we are admonished to not insult the Spirit of grace, to not show despite to the Spirit of grace. The appropriate response to Him is love, imitation of His graciousness toward us. So, to be increasing in faith, hope, and love, faith which works, hope which is assured, or love which works, hope which is assured, and faith which is patient, involves necessarily a continuing response in our lives to the Godhead, to the Trinity in these ways. And that means that we'll have a living and active spiritual life, one that's rich and fulfilling. And then the other thing that happens is if a person is maturing in those ways, is that there'll be a growing person there, no matter what age or what stage in life we are. The way for us to find life rewarding and fulfilling is to be always maturing and growing. You never get completely there. There's always the growing up to do as long as we're in this life, isn't there? At least that's my experience. At least Kay keeps telling me to grow up. And I think that's what the Lord says to me, grow up. So in this passage, I read and I think about something that I read that Neil Pryor, longtime instructor at Harding that people loved highly, used to like to tell young people, in order to live successfully, he would say, you need a self to live with, a faith to live by, and a purpose to live for. And if you'll really think about it here, someone who loves the Lord like this will be capable of accepting himself and loving himself appropriately and loving other people. This is essential equipment for all other relationships right here. And then a faith to live by obviously would be faith in the faith, which causes us to patiently bring ourselves in line with it. And a purpose to live for would be the hope of the inheritance which God has promised us. And that would be an ever-present way in life, week in, week out, year in, year out, which gives us something to shoot for. I want to be able to live with myself, to live by my faith, and to live for the hope that I've heard in the gospel is laid up for me in heaven. So now think about it. In your case, beloved, to use this writer's language, are things better with your faith and hope and love? Is your faith stronger, your hope deeper, and your love warmer than it was a year ago? Does it need the admonition of Hebrews 6, 1 through 8, or the encouragement of Hebrews 6, 9 through 12? The good news is that things that belong to salvation, according to this passage, can be in each one of us. We can show love for His name. We can show earnestness, diligence, sincerity and our hope, and we can be imitators of people who have shown patient faith all the way to the end. If we're looking for that, we can find people like that to imitate. So this week, Watermill Church, let's each go on a little farther in that direction. That's all that the Lord gives us to do, a little farther in this direction. If you haven't yet made the beginning response to the promise of God and the work of Jesus and the Spirit of grace, I want to lovingly encourage you to think about doing that today. Do it this morning if you've been intending to. We'd love to help you if we can. Think about the labor of love and the assurance of hope and the patience of faith and what they can do for your life. If we can help you, let us know by coming here while we stand and sing.